Hello and welcome to another episode of the Football History Boys podcast with me, Ben Jones, and as always, my good friend Gareth Thomas.
It is great to be back in the same room. Socially distanced, of course, but we are back in the same room.
Yeah, weird, isn't it? We've been doing a lot of podcasts on Zoom recently, but we are here together today. This is the last episode of the first season of the Football History Boys podcast. We thought we'd have a recap through what has probably been the most insane, the most crazy season we can remember. We're going to think about what has made this season so special. We're also going to look back through history and look at some of the most important or significant seasons that have shaped the game we know and love today. So we're going to each choose three seasons and discuss them. And then we're going to hear some of your responses as well before going on to discuss why this current season will go down in history as one of the most important.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think what's inspired it is that stat, isn't it? That Liverpool are the earliest ever title winners in terms of games played, but also the latest ever title winners in terms of the calendar date. And that amazing stat that this season will go down in history, absolutely. And when people say about our book, which was released in April, which is available in all good bookshops, particularly Waterstones in Cardiff, where we saw it the other day, football's 50 most important moments. A lot of people have said, surely this season would be included. And yeah, it probably would be. If we were writing this now in a year or two time, we probably would include this season as one of the most significant. And so we thought, what are some of the other most significant seasons? And so we are going to check that out throughout today.
So let's kick straight off then and look at these incredible seasons. We're going to start with you, Gareth. What is the first season you've chosen as one of the most important in football history?
Yeah, one that also got a lot of responses from listeners too is the 1888 to 1889 Football League season. It's the first ever Football League season.
I remember it well.
well, you should. It's in our book. It's in our book, Football City, Most Important Moments. Why is it so significant? I mean, it goes without saying that it's important, isn't it? Because it is the first ever Football League season. Football has obviously been around 20, 30 years with clubs playing each other, but there wasn't this organised league structure across the country. The Football League is set up and starts that year. And not only do we have something that grows into the football that we know and love today in this country, we also have the first ever Invincibles, Preston North End. 22 games, that's all they played back then. There was 12 teams in the league, 22 games, 18 wins and 4 draws. So they go invincible in the Football League, led by people like John Goodall, who is their top scorer with 21 goals, their main man for goals there. But not only that, they also win the FA Cup as well. They win the first ever double. So we get the first ever double in the first ever Football League season, and that is also an invincible year for them. So a really, really incredible season for Preston, and there's been books written about that side. But I think it's just so significant, isn't it, that Football League season, because it leads to everything that we have from today, that we know and love in this country. And we get, you know, out of that, the league expands over the next coming years. And codifies more, and then leagues across Europe sort of take shape. And I think this is all because of the Football League. You know, that also quite liked the when I was looking at some of the stats, and there was 586 goals in those games. So it's 4.4 a match.
Not bad.
It's not a bad.
Entertaining.
Return entertaining. Yeah, there's a couple of massive ones. There's a 9-1 win for Villa over Notts County. There's a 5-5 between Blackburn and Accrington Stanley. I think that's on the first ever one or the second ever week. You know, and so I think this is quite an important season. So that's why I would include it. And lots of other people agreed as well with us there.
I think it's important as well as it's the first one. And it had to do well, didn't it? Because obviously it's the first time. So with the whole professionalism amateur debate going on earlier in the decade, the introduction to the Football League, it needed to set in stone, you know, what it was all about in those first few months, in that first season. And obviously it does so well. And you see the attendances then start to rise every season onwards up till, you know, into the 20th century. So it was a success. Obviously Preston, yeah, incredible team, and there's some really good books on it is now out there as well. I think it's when we first started writing the blog, when we found out about Preston North End's Invincibles, it inspired us, and it's to go back even further and look at that sort of Victorian football. So yeah, fantastic stuff. Good.
What's your first ever one then? I would just say it's just a bit of a shame for Preston, isn't it? Their best ever season was the first ever Football League season. It's hard to better that, isn't it? Invincible.
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
But what is your first ever, what is your first one then? First of the three that you've chosen as significant?
My first is, we're jumping forward in time a bit now, after World War II. Mine is 1953 to 1954. So, end of 1953, you have the Matthews final. that incredible match between Bolton and Blackpool. Stanley Matthews plays out of his skin to help win the cup for Blackpool. Stan Mortensen scores a hat-trick. It's a game which a lot of historians write is, you know, it epitomises British culture, British sport and tradition. The FA Cup final. And Stanley Matthews, at the age of 38, wins the cup, plays really well. He's someone who has exemplified what makes British sport so good. He's plays really well, but he also has respect for the traditions, respect for the authorities. People love him. It was also a match which was televised, the second half live on TV. So it gives us that sort of idea of TV coming into it in the following season. So the following year then, British football after the Matthews final thinks it is, you know, really good. And then the Hungarian Magyars come to town in November. They smash them 6-3. It's we've said about this loads of times, haven't we?
Yeah.
That match, we probably think it's probably the most important match in British football history.
Yeah, fundamental.
Because everything has to change. It's when, what often commentators like to say these days are, you know, that's the moment that British football first realised it was bad. But it wasn't. The signs were there and the press reports from the time say, now this is finally, you know, put the nail in the coffin. British football isn't as good as it is. Hungary has shown it up. And it all has to change. And then as the season progresses and goes on, we see Wolves win the Football League, which is a massive deal because Wolves then go on those incredible floodlit friendlies the year after as well. So Wolves by Wolves winning that, it sets in stone that amazing opportunity for Wolves to face the Hungarians in the following year, which of course they win. So it does show that British football starts to wake up and realise where it is. And it's a big reflection of British society in general after the Second World War, realising that it isn't as great as it likes to think it is. Is it Great Britain anymore and so on. But yeah, that's what I've gone for. And obviously, you've got the World Cup in that summer. The miracle of Bern. Hungary losing the final, tragically, to West Germany, who obviously, you know, 9 years before, had lost the Second World War and were hated throughout Europe. It's the first time the German anthem had been allowed to be played at sporting events, I think, in the final. And they win the game and it helps people to sort of rethink what they believe about Germany and so on. So it's a massive season, for not just stuff on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important one, isn't it? And it's right in the middle of, you know, we've written about it in the past, isn't it? People say the 50s were football's most important decade or football's finest decade. And this one comes right in the middle of it and epitomises it, as you said, with the international side of it, but also, I think, domestically as well. It was one of the heydays of British football, isn't it? Attendances, when you look at attendance records, a lot of them are set in the 50s, aren't they? As people sought to, you know, find ways of spending their extra money that they've got now, post-war, entertainment, things like that is growing, and so sport becomes a huge, huge part of that.
Yeah,
so,
what I also found was interesting was, as a Liverpool fan, I never mentioned that, Liverpool got relegated that season. They got relegated to the second division, which they stayed in for quite a number of years, and that's why Shankly comes in then in 1959. So Liverpool's relegation in 54 actually might be quite a good thing for the club, and that's, you know, how they got that massive trophy cabinet after that. So another little interesting bit there.
That is a good little fact. Yeah. And so I'll take you with that as well. I'm going to drop in, and I don't do it too often, but I will drop in Cardiff City here now for my second one. It's the 1923-1924 First Division season.
Okay.
Not just because of Cardiff City, because we don't actually win anything, but mainly because of Huddersfield Town win their first ever championships.
Okay, yeah.
Under Herbert Chapman, who obviously is an incredibly important figure in pre-war British football. Mm-hmm. They win the title 3 years in a row after this, so they win in 24, 25 and 26. He wins two of them. Yeah. And they are, of course, really, really significant because what it does is enable Chapman to move on and become the legendary Arsenal manager that many people remember him as. People forget that he was first at Huddersfield. Mm-hmm. At Huddersfield, he wins the FA Cup in 1922, so their first and only ever FA Cup. The Charity Shield then following that, and then those two First Division titles. And then he moves on to Arsenal, where he has more success in the league and dies quite suddenly, actually. He's quite sad and tragic, his death, what he could have done if he had had the hold of the 30s, really. But why is it so significant? Well, I think obviously it's important for Huddersfield Town. For me, as a Cardiff fan, we come really, really close to winning that First Division title. We miss out on goal average.
Oh.
0.024 alone. Very small, very minuscule goal average. Level on points.
That is mad.
Yeah, level on points, level on goal difference is goal average that is the thing that separates the two sides. And so I think in that way, obviously really important for Cardiff. The next year for City, it is an important decade for us, the 1920s. Promoted at the start of the 1920s. Established themselves in the top flight. Obviously come really close to win the league here. The next year, Cardiff make the FA Cup final and lose, quite sadly, to Sheffield United. Lose 1-0. Obviously, 2 years later, in 1927, which is an article I've just written about on the blog, thefootballhistoryboys.com, they then win the FA Cup against Arsenal. And interestingly, the person that they play in that final is Herbert Chapman's Arsenal. So Chapman and Cardiff are intertwined as sort of rivals throughout that period of time.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You could write a book about it.
Yeah. Yeah, we sort of have a little bit. Yeah, he does feature in our new book, absolutely. It will feature in the book that's coming out next year, which is very exciting. We've got more to say about that later. But yeah, I think it's a really important season because it does enable Chapman to become sort of the legendary manager he is, isn't it? When you think about sort of massive moments, talking about Mourinho and winning the 2004 Champions League and the thing that enables him to move to Chelsea and build onto what he then becomes, and likewise with Pep and winning so successfully Barcelona straight away when he takes over there, and all the different managers, those big moments they've had. This is Chapman's big moment. And why is he so important? You know, if you don't know much about him, he sort of brings in tactical meetings, which is really interesting, about specifically matching up to play opponents rather than just sending 11 men out on the field. He would say, right, you need to mark this guy, you need to do this to this person or whatever, and analyses people. He's a big media man, so he appreciates that football clubs need to be media savvy to do the best they can, and so him and the club do that really well. And there's a film that comes out, isn't there, the Arsenal Stadium Mystery. I think he had died by the time, sadly, that comes out, but he was heavily involved in that.
Yeah, the 1925 as well, wasn't it? The offside rule changed.
Yes.
And he was fundamental in adapting tactics to suit that, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, a massive. He's really ahead of his time, really. The WM formation, which becomes the British staple formation, he changes that. That changes the way of the old style of everyone sort of having loads of strikers and not many defenders. He switches that up. He also brings in the white kit sleeves to the Arsenal kits, so you can see them in peripheral vision. And, of course, Arsenal's new kit, which is lovely, by the way, for next season. Really nice kit.
It's nice.
But they've obviously still got the white sleeves on there, that tradition that he started. And also, he just takes care of players. I read Eddie Hapgood's book the other day, actually, when we were away for a week in West Wales. And it says there that he was signed by Chapman because he didn't smoke and he didn't drink. And he looked after himself. Mm. Chapman liked in there. When he met him, he said, do you smoke, do you drink? And obviously, in the 30s, smoking and drinking was very popular for footballers and for culture. And so the fact that he's already thinking about the player's body and the physical side of that, incredibly important person. So that is his first year. So that's why I think it's important. It's also big for Cardiff City too, so I'm going to have that in for us.
Herbert Chapman is a funny one because if you look, we do any research or articles on football from, I don't know, 1910 to 1930, 1940, he always just pops up. And we're like, who you're studying or what team it is, Herbert Chapman just appears. Oh, there he is again, doing something, you know, massive. Because we put a video about Leeds and me onto YouTube recently, and Herbert Chapman's got a part in the early Leeds history as well, which, you know, I didn't realise. So, yeah, incredible manager, incredible person.
Yeah, really important figure. Okay, what is your second most significant season?
Okay, second for me is 1966 to 1967. For these reasons. So 1966, obviously, that season ended with the World Cup. Huge event. England win the World Cup. It's obviously, some people get, you know, they get tired of England winning the World Cup, that again. But it is a hugely significant moment in football history. You have, obviously, colour TV comes in massively in for the World Cup. So that's one massive change. But also, it reflects the wider changes in society. The 1960s, some people say it's probably the most important decade of the last few hundred years in the way that culture just rapidly changed. Young people, you know, come to the forefront of culture, change in fashion, changes in to style of football, everything. So 1967, we're hoping that these traditions, these new traditions, are going to be kept up now. We're not going to regress back to what it was like before the 60s. And 67, you have Celtic win everything that season. They win the Scottish League, the Scottish Cup, the Scottish League Cup, the Glasgow Cup, and then they win, of course, that incredible European Cup final against Inter Milan in 67. So Inter Milan play the Catenaccio style, that rigid defensive style which people don't tend to like. It's defensive, it's negative. Yeah, Celtic under Jock Steen play that progressive, beautiful attacking football, which of course wins the game. And it sort of signifies a shift in attitudes of football, in the adoption of different tactics. They won it in 67, playing lovely football, and you then see Ajax start to come through with their total football under Rinus Michels. You see Man United the following season winning the European Cup, playing lovely football with Best, Lawrence, and so on, and Charlton. So it's an important season for me, not just because of what happened after the World Cup, but because of this whole style of football changed in that year. And then, of course, then a couple of years later, you have massive things going off the pitch. You have the Summer of Love and so on in America, and attitudes have changed. It is a more progressive society, more open to ideas and different tactics, and that's what Celtic, I guess, signified in that year. And of course, Man United won the league in 67, which then gave them the chance to overcome that difficult 10-year period following the Munich disaster, because they go on to win the Champions League or the European Cup the final year. So, a really important year. It features quite heavily in our book as well.
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it? And I think there's something else that, obviously now, modern world, we sort of go, Scottish football is not so important. Or likewise, Welsh will go, why does England winning the World Cup matter? You know, we're Welsh.
Yeah.
I think back then, of course, there was rivalries between the home nations, and the home nations championship proved that, but it was very much Britain take, wasn't it? I think. And I think that's why it's so significant. The fact that Celtic win it, it didn't matter that it was a Scottish team. It was big for British football. That was the first ever British club to win the European Cup. Same with England winning the World Cup. It's like the first home nation to win the World Cup.
You just saw British flags in the stadium. Yeah. There was no St. George crosses. It was all Union flags in that stadium in 66. And it's the same when Celtic win. There's probably not as many Union flags there, of course, for Celtic. But the Pathé reports from the time, they're all saying Britain is behind Celtic. Britain, this could be the first British winner. It's a massive deal. Whereas these days, I'd speak for my own thoughts. Liverpool will be a Champions League and they'll go out. I don't want another English team to win the Champions League this year because I'm jealous. So it's weird, but back then there would have been that support, I imagine. Yeah,
and likewise with England, isn't it? I remember when England dumped out in 2016, Euro 2016, versus Iceland in the pub in Cardiff, like banging on the wall, celebrating, going crazy because Iceland had beaten England. Yeah. It just wasn't the case back then. It wasn't the case. And so, it is really important because that is, I think, the season where Britain sort of go, we're here. We've done it. We've finally won some stuff.
Yeah, we've won the World Cup. We've now won the European Cup, and they've overcome that turbulent 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, final one each from us then, and then we'll have a break and then we'll hear some of your shouts. So, my third and final one is the 1988 to 1989, so 100 years after my first one, first division season. Arsenal win the title in the last minute. So, firstly, we'll do the positives. Arsenal win the title in the last minute. Very, very famous goal, isn't it? And it'll feature in our new book.
At Anfield,
it was a delayed game. It was played right after the FA Cup at the end of May, so unheard of back then. Obviously, the FA Cup final was sort of still a focal point, I guess, then. What everyone sat down and watched. The season was finished by then, and you'd watch the FA Cup. This was after the FA Cup. And Arsenal went to Anfield needing to win by at least two goals. All Liverpool had to do was draw, or even lose by a goal. And it's all going okay. They're losing by a goal, but very late on. Last minute of the game, and I think, do you want to take up the story of what happens?
It's up for grabs now. Michael Thomas runs through, slots past Grobbelaar, wins the league for Arsenal.
It's a huge period for Arsenal because they haven't won the league for many years, certainly at least a decade, I think it is. We did write it down in our book, and we've got the exact date of how long it had been, but it had been a long time since Arsenal had clinched the title.
Yeah.
And obviously to rip it away from Liverpool, that had such a strong 1980s, was a really, really significant season for Arsenal. But obviously I think that the real reason why this season is so significant is because of what happens in April that year. The 15th of April, of course, is the Hillsborough disaster. A really, really tragic occasion, which I'm sure everyone listening knows about. 96 Liverpool fans are killed in the Hillsborough disaster. Really, really just typifies the disasters that happened throughout the 1980s, isn't it? It'd been a really difficult decade for football. You know, those quotes that we've used before. In the start of 1980, Nicholas Keith, who's a sports editor for the Times, writes, "If we don't do something, there's a real danger that football will die from a lack of support because only thugs will go and watch it. Football is sick. It may be terminal." And in 1985, we get football as a slum sport, played in slum stadiums, increasingly watched by slum people who deter decent people from turning up. 1980s had been a time of hooliganism and fighting and violence, and we see the Heysel disaster that sees the ban of English clubs from Europe for 5 years. We see people killed, so a fan killed in Birmingham the same day as the Bradford Stadium fire, when there was obviously the tragic circumstances there, which wasn't hooliganism, but that was caused by the lack of stadium maintenance and the lack of care in football. And then again, 1989, obviously Hillsborough, 96 fans, not killed again through hooliganism, nothing to do with hooliganism, but to do with the fact that cages were put up to prevent hooligans getting onto the pitch. So it's as a result of hooliganism, there are these cages surrounding the pitch, and those fans are crushed through various incompetencies and things like that that, you know, are still a part of legal proceedings. But, you know, tragic, tragic circumstances. That wakes up football, isn't it? It leads to various reports. The Taylor report that goes, we need to sort this out in this country. And football unites around trying to get rid of these cages. But by doing that, you have to get rid of hooliganism. And I think 89 is significant. It's part of my dissertation as a university of how this shakes football and goes, we're going to stop this violence. And of course, violence still happens. It still does today. But nothing on the scale that we saw regularly of the 80s. And I think that that season, that 89 season, is that point where we go, like, enough. This has to stop. This has to stop. Yeah. I mean, is there anything else to add about it?
Well, the FA Cup final that year, like you mentioned, that's obviously Liverpool won the FA Cup that year. And it was Everton in the final, which sort of was a hugely significant opponent, obviously, because the Hillsborough disaster had killed 96 fans. And Liverpool, such a close-knit city, families, you can have a Liverpool and Everton family supporters in the same family.
Yeah.
So Everton and Liverpool being in that final was a huge, huge moment, really. You know, the Merseyside coming together with massive tragedies. You know, when Rhys Jones died, I think, in 2006. Liverpool invited Everton, his Everton supporter family, to the stadium, and they played Zed cars over, you know, Anfield, and everyone applauded. You know, there's no animosity at all to it. But yeah, that 89 final was huge, hugely significant for the city. But yeah, like you say, it's massive. It did change. People knew this was going on, they knew it had to change, but it really pushed people to actually do something, didn't it? Finally, because, you know, it's just a shame that it took, like you say, Heysel, Bradford Fire, Hillsborough to actually start to change things in stadiums. And then, of course, Italia 90 then the following season helps sort of further change attitudes towards British football, English football in particular, because they do so well. And then of course, the Premier League comes in just in 92.
Yeah, and then in 1996, England are chosen to host the European Championships, aren't they? Which is a really significant thing. And there aren't major reports of violence. So, you know, within that 7 years since Hillsborough, there has been this massive change in attitude. And so it's so significant, really, in that way. And that's what we talk about. Significant seasons, not just the best, not just, you know, your favourite season. I think this is a really sort of fundamental season in changing attitudes in British football.
Yeah, I mean, 89, you could say it was probably the worst season, really, for what happened, but it's the most significant, arguably.
Yeah. Great. Okay, what is your final one? And then we'll take a break.
My final one is a little bit more modern. 2004-2005. This is when me and you were in year seven. This is when I feel like this is the birth of football. This is an incredible year. I had all the match magazines this year. This is amazing. If I look back at any team from this year, I can name all the players, whatever the team is. It's an amazing year. This is the year, of course, that Mourinho joins Chelsea. Mm. The Premier League changes massively because of it. Chelsea, Abramovich had been there for a year, but now he's got a manager as well. They buy the league, but they play this football. They get 95 points. You know, he has his attitude, this charisma, which no one's really seen that much in the Premier League. Everyone was used to the Wenger versus Fergie arguments. But then Mourinho comes in, he's a new kid on the block. He's just won the Champions League with Porto, which is, you know, a massive achievement. I don't think it gets talked about enough, to be fair. and then a Greece have won the Euros before. And then he comes in and he shakes things up. Obviously, Benitez comes into Liverpool as well. Liverpool were the Champions League that year with arguably one of the worst squads to win it. You know, Jimmy Traore started the final. Players like Biscan, Cinema, Pongol and Antonio Nunes on the bench against that incredible AC Milan side. It's just a massive year altogether. I think Arsenal were the Invincibles before and they lose that season with the Pizzagate incident.
Fabregas.
Yeah, it was just huge. And then obviously you got in Italy, you got the Calciopoli scandals is in its first season, because they obviously the following year as well was another match fixed season. It's just huge, and it's weird because I think that's the year we started high school. I always have like a cut off between 2003-04 and 2004-05 is like as a big line in the middle of them, of like an older style and like a newer style because of the change to the Premier League. I think that's the year as well when the Premier League became the best league in Europe. I think that's the year it surpassed Serie A and things like that because of Mourinho, Benitez, Wenger, Ferguson, and the big four sort of emerges that season as well. Which is huge. I mean, Everton actually came fourth that season, to be fair, as well.
Yeah.
But I just love that season, obviously, personally. But I think because it's the high school years as well. The year I first met you as well.
Nostalgic, isn't it? Yeah, nostalgic. Yeah, no, but it is. Of course it is. And we can't talk about significant years without thinking about the Premier League. And particularly the impact that people like Mourinho made on the Premier League is huge, isn't it?
It is
huge.
Before that, of course, United won the Champions League in 99, but then there hadn't been any English finalists, had there, until 2005. And then from there, Arsenal 2006, Liverpool 2007, United and Chelsea 2008, and so on. So it's the first year of that English dominance of Europe, I think, re-dominance of Europe.
Good discussion that. Enjoyed that. Get in touch, of course, and let's hear your thoughts on that. The Twitter is @TFHBS.
The website is www.thefootballhistoryboys.com.
And you can check us out on Facebook too, The Football History Boys. Well, I'll have a break and then we're going to hear what some of your opinions were in terms of the most important seasons or football's most significant seasons. Welcome back. Let's talk about some of your most significant seasons then. We've had quite a few responses on this, so let's have a look. Outside Right, a great site to check them out on Twitter, Outside Right. They have said they've gone with, the same as me, 1888 to 1889, first ever full league season anywhere ever. Everything else follows. Good summary, that. Good short summary of why that season is so important.
Yeah, you can't really argue that, can you? Yeah. That's a very, as you said, very good summary. Right, Dan Rawlinson. It's @DanRawley on Twitter. 92 to 93, the inaugural Premier League season, which changed the whole landscape, good and bad, and paved the way for football to be money-driven business it is today. Also, the first season with the new backpass law, changing the way some teams set up and played. We were going to go over 92-3, weren't we, in our own choices?
Yeah.
But we thought, we've talked about it so much, and we know
someone will, listeners
will have said it as well. But yeah,
obviously really significant. Yeah.
Can't argue with that, can you really? I mean, the backpass law, huge, and I like that he said good and bad about the Premier League.
Yeah, love it or hate it, B-Sky P did change football in some ways, yeah. Holmesy, 83, on Twitter, got in touch and said the 96-97 season, the effects of the Bosman ruling starting to kick in, of course, really important, Bosman ruling allowing players to move as free agents, moving on free transfers, massive part of the game now, mm-hmm. didn't happen before that year. Ending the transfer fees, those who ultimately have, has ultimately killed smaller clubs who rely upon developing talent and signing players on. It is true, it's interesting actually, there's one right now happening at the moment with Cardiff City with a guy called Cameron Cox who's been released from the club. Who didn't play hardly any games. I think it was four games, maybe five games in his time at City. He's now been linked with Man City on a free transfer.
You're going to retire his number?
I hope not. Jude Bellingham. But yeah, ultimately, I mean, it does hurt clubs. Obviously, it's beneficial to a lot of clubs as well. Every club has benefited from a free transfer. Every club has, sadly, obviously lost out from a free transfer too. So yeah, that is significant.
Yeah, it's the player power, isn't it, and the agents.
Yeah, and it develops fees and the wages get out of control. Yeah, so obviously he's got a very negative view of it. Of course, there are lots of negatives kind of it, and Alex Ferguson agrees with that in his autobiography, how damaging the Bosman ruling was, but likewise significant for players moving on free transfers too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Right, Hugh Larkin, for British football, 1989 to 1990, so the year after you chose, G. Before Italian 90, the game was seen as backward, unappealing, violent and ridden and on the decline. And of course, Italian 90 helps to start to change those perceptions from not just in England, but from outside of it as well.
Yeah. We've got Stu Peters here saying the same about the first year of the Premier League season. He agrees. Russell Chapman has gone for 75-76 because he's a QPR fan. Significant year for QPR.
Fair play. Robert Prattley has gone for 25-26 when the offside rule changed, which you mentioned on the show.
Yeah. Mark Gray goes again for the end of the 80s, 1980s, that is, so 88-89, 89-90, decline of Liverpool and the rise of United, which is true, obviously Liverpool's final title coming at then, which obviously broken this year. The switch between squad management and building a team and things like that, the importance of the transfer system, building a squad, and of course, you know, we add into that with what we're saying about the Hillsborough disaster and the end of hooliganism on top of that as well. And there are other people agreeing alongside that. We've got Aidan O'Ring also going back another 100 years. He's saying the 88-89 because it's football's first.
We've got HTF68. He says 88-89 like you, the starting point of modern football.
Interesting.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And finally, Alan Lowry says 1922. I mean, that's he's Huddersfield fan. That was Huddersfield's. He may well actually
York City.
Look at him. Oh, York City. Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. But last one at Wembley, isn't it? Last one not at Wembley. FA Cup final not at Wembley, and that is Huddersfield's first and only ever FA Cup, which we mentioned as well. So I think we've done quite well there. When we've summed it up as six seasons ourselves, I think lots of other people have sort of agreed with us across that.
Yeah, nice. I like that. Most people have had different seasons. Yeah. It shows, doesn't it? Football's a subjective game. Whatever everyone has their own personal opinions on what's going on. So yeah, nice.
Absolutely. And let's get our subjective opinions then with some quick fire questions that I'm going to fire at you, and I'm going to add my own as well, about the current season that we've just had, this longest ever season. Saying Wolves now has gone over a year, isn't it, from when Wolves played their first game, because they came back to play earlier than everyone else for qualifying for the Europa League, and of course they could end up winning the Europa League.
That'd be insane.
At the end of August, and then have to come back within about 10 days of that. So, I mean, it's been an incredibly long season for some football clubs.
Yeah.
Really historic. But there has been a lot of good football as well. And so, my first question to you is, who is this season's, and obviously we are going to be Premier League focused on this, but who is this season's Player of the Year?
Jordan Henderson. Have I got to say why?
Yeah, you can't. Well,
I could say De Bruyne as well. Yeah. Both class players. Yeah. I think I can't kick De Bruyne because he's been on the losing side 9 times. Whereas Henderson, I think he's done an incredible job. He was belittled by a lot of people, including a lot of Liverpool fans, when he got given that captain's armband from Gerrard, and it ended up doing what Gerrard couldn't do.
Yeah,
winning the league.
Yeah,
there you go. Fair. Who'd you go?
I've gone KDB because I knew you'd go Henderson. So yeah, I just KDB. Kevin De Bruyne's had a fantastic season again, isn't he? Assist record that he matched and everything else that he's done for Man City. He's their main man, isn't he? The other one, just another shout. I think Danny Ings has had a very good season as well, hasn't he? Very, very good season for someone at a lower half. Are they lower half? Oh, a mid-table club. Club.
Mane as well.
Mane, yeah. Fair. Young player of the season?
Trent.
Yes, yeah, of course. You forget that he's a young player still.
21,
he's established, yeah. And I've gone for Mason Greenwood, who's broke through for United and become really key in the second half of their season, really, isn't he? He's become important.
Yeah, I've gone for Trent. I think he's just incredible. I think he's probably the best dead ball specialist or crosser of the ball since Beckham.
Yeah.
In the Premier League.
Yeah. Or Peter Whitnam, RIP.
Yeah. In the Premier League?
Yeah. Well, when you look at but it's a similar thing, isn't it? When you get a free kick in a decent position, you think he's going to score, yeah? It's the same with City, Cardiff, with Peter Whitnam. You think you'd probably just score.
Was it only Grealish and De Bruyne set up more chances than Trent, and he's a right back.
He's an incredible player. Do you think he'll move forwards? Do you think he'll become a winger?
I think he'll take Salah's position.
And Nico Williams will
establish? Nico Williams, hopefully.
At right back.
Nico Williams is very similar to what Trent was like at that age.
Yeah.
A bit erratic at times, but also pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope he develops, obviously, for Wales as well. Okay, Club of the Year, then, to disappointment. So when you talk about clubs, who's the disappointment of the year?
Leicester.
Ooh, okay.
Because they should have been Champions League, and they let Man United in.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They must be kicking themselves. I know they had a phenomenal year, obviously 2016, but this was looking like it was going to be something special.
They would have been the surprise package of the year. Unbelievable. But now they're disappointing.
Yeah. Mine, I've gone Bournemouth. I've always had a soft spot for Bournemouth, and obviously no one, I think, would have expected them to go down in quite the way they did. A lot of money in that squad. They're obviously having to sell players now, but you think that they are going to be sold so many players and have to cut the cost so much. You don't know whether they'll be able to bounce back up. I don't think they will.
Brooks and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, a lot of their good players, obviously Ake going to Man City and things like that. Yeah. Signing of the season.
Signing of the season. Well, it's going to have to be him, isn't it? Man United's Bruno Fernandes.
I've got him as well.
Pains me to say it, but he has changed their fortunes a lot.
He revolutionised United, didn't
he? He's a good player. I saw him in a friendly at the start of the season against Liverpool for Lisbon, and I thought, he's a decent player. I'd love us to get him.
Yeah.
So I was a big gutted when he went to Man United.
He's been superb. 17 games, 8 goals and 7 assists.
A lot of penalties.
Man. Yeah, I know a lot of penalties, but likewise, you know, his job is assists, isn't it, really, I guess?
Yeah,
He's done the job in that way, and he's enabled that front three of Martial, Rashford and Greenwood to play, and he looks like he can play alongside Pogba as well. So you wonder whether next season they will, if they continue sort of looking as good as they are.
Any other suggestions for that?
Ings signed permanently this year, didn't he?
He's permanent, yeah. And same with Jimenez, it was.
Yeah, Jimenez. I can't think of anything
there
particularly significant in terms of changing a football club's fortunes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes.
Disappointment of the year player-wise.
Oh.
I'll tell you what I've got. I've gone either, so it's two keeper-wise, De Gea or Kepa. Obviously both with huge names above them, huge transfer fees. Kepa, both, you know, have got mistakes in them, isn't it? I mean, when you look at it, they've been surpassed by Dean Henderson and Nick Pope. Both of them. So I think they're both phenomenal keepers. And obviously, Alisson and Edison as well. But Henderson and Pope look far better keepers than De Gea and Kepa at the moment. I know they have more to do, but De Gea's cost Man United so many times, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So many times. I know he's been phenomenal for them over the years, but he looks like he's gone. And Kepa doesn't look worth 75 million.
No. My disappointment transfer-wise would be Nicola Pepe, Arsenal.
Yeah, a lot of hopes on his shoulders from there. 72 million. Yeah. Yeah, another one I say, I don't know, it's harsh for him disappointing the year because he had a good post-lockdown, but Kane, I think he's starting to slow, it looks like, in terms of his injuries are getting to him.
It's the World Cup as the start of his decline.
And of course, you know, Tottenham aren't playing very well, and so that doesn't help things, but he doesn't look like the sort of guy that is going to go on to break Shearer's record anymore. When it was looking like he's going to take that as 260 mark, I don't know if he will anymore.
He'll have to, if he can adapt his style of play to becoming just a bit more of a poacher, just stand in the box and get on the end of it, you'll be able to do it.
Ronaldo.
That's what I if he kept, penalty specialist.
Yeah.
Sorry, Cristiano Ronaldo fans.
Yeah, he's good.
CR7 forever.
And he won the league, along with Ramsey. Post-lockdown winner, club-wise.
Man United, unfortunately.
Yeah, Man United, they're insane. That's what gave me a massive boost transfer-wise, fantasy-wise.
I refuse to re-put United players in my fantasy team. It sort of screwed me over a little bit.
Yeah, and so did players in my head-to-head league, who Liverpool fan, James Cartwright, refused to put any United players in, and he was flying and then stumbled.
I did put Rashford in at the end, because he was getting quite a few goals. That did help me a little bit.
I had Bruno, Rashford and Greenwood at times.
I had Ings all season in my team, Ings, because my team is flying without Ings.
Yeah.
But they do have Ings in there as well. He's been in the whole time. I was ridiculed at the start.
It's very good season. 21 goals. Big signings for prediction for next year. Big signing of the season. Do you predict to be big, or what are you thinking for next year?
Like, who's going to make a big signing?
Yeah, who's going to make a big signing, and who will that be? Who are you excited
about? Well, I don't think anyone's going to be as good a signing as Werner for Chelsea, myself.
We had a couple of conversations about this with me, and I know, you know, Liverpool have justified it, saying they can't afford it and this and that, but I think you're going to regret it so badly when he scores 25 goals.
I don't think next season we'll regret it.
Yeah, maybe not next.
I think there'll be the season after, because I think Firmino's 29. Salah and mine 28, so they're all at their peak now. So they've probably got one more good season together.
And then you're going to be looking for a replacement.
Then we'll be looking for a replacement.
And Werner is going
to
be.
So it would have been good to have Werner to just sort of bleed him in. And then.
Yeah. I don't know. I know the club have said they haven't got that money, but just pay it. There's no one else you could sign that is going to be better for you than Werner.
They'll have to sell it. They've obviously got rid of Lovren, and you know, some other players might go, Shaqiri and so on. So get a few bit for that. Yeah. Anyone else? I don't think
Sancho's linked heavily, isn't he? Yeah, Sancho's linked.
I think he's too good for them.
I think they will go.
Do you actually?
I think they will. Right. I think they will.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I think they will. Who do you think will do best out of the promoted clubs next year? Obviously, so, by the way, just to mention, you know, as it stands, Leeds and West Brom, it's looking like it'll be Brentford in the final. They got there against Swansea, and it's probably going to be Fulham. They play tonight. It's almost certainly going to be Fulham. We're not going to turn it over.
It's good optimism, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be Leeds easily.
Yeah, sadly as well. You know, obviously they love that they're back in the top flight, and you know where we belong, even though you've not been in the top flight for 16 years and all this business. But yeah, I think they will. I think they'll spend money. Bielsa, they're gonna do well. They're gonna do well.
It's just Bielsa, isn't it? Yeah, he's class.
Yeah, although I hope West Brom do well. You know, with Harold Sankanu and the like.
Yeah,
they need to make a few signs today. Last two then. Must have player for next year's fantasy football.
Oh, well, last year we said Kane, didn't we? Because of the VAR, we give loads of pens, and the VAR ended up not giving loads of pens, and because referee's too scared to give them. I reckon it's someone who can get. Well, I'll always put Salah and De Bruyne, because despite the fact that De Bruyne got how many goals? Quite a lot, didn't he?
Yes,
he got about 12, 13 goals, 20 assists. Salah got 19 goals and 10 assists as well. So they're both players who get you loads of points. So, and they're both midfielders, so they get the clean sheets as well.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
So I'd say one of those two. But that's a bit of an obvious choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want more of a wild card, don't you?
Yeah.
Right, let's go with it's gonna be hard actually. You tell me yours.
I think maybe it's not an obvious choice. Werner, I think he will just come in and score straight away. I think he will. He's my first pick in terms of when it comes to... We're going to do the draft next year, I think, with my friends, where you only get one of each player and you draft it a bit like NFL style. And so if I have near first pick, one of my first will be obviously either De Bruyne, Werner, or Fernandes. I think Fernandes, again, could have another very good season.
Fernandes, sure. Trent's always good on it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because he got the clean sheets.
Yeah, he's basically like a winger playing at defence, so you get the clean sheets for it. Yeah, it's true. And then finally, obviously, the Champions League. We've got an exciting August coming up with Champions League every single day or whatever it looks like, and Europa League alongside that. Who's going to win it? Who do you think? Like, looking at the sort of the brackets and this and that, who do you think is going to win it?
So the draw has put a few spanners in the works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because one side of the draw is significantly harder than the other. I'm going to go... Gosh, it's hard. Maybe a curveball and chuck Atletico Madrid as the winners.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity for them, isn't it? It's a big opportunity. I think Bayern Munich have looked so good.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to be Bayern Munich.
But will they suffer not having played for quite a bit?
Yeah, I presume they've got friendlies coming up, but yeah, no, they've not had the intensity of it. Atalanta obviously looking very, very good in Italy as well, scoring PSG. A heck of a lot of goals. PSG, again, they haven't had competitive football for a while now, other than the final. The cup, and Mbappe is out.
Friendlies as well.
Out for potentially some of it, so
yeah. Wow, it's gonna be. I think this is really interesting. Years where you can't really predict. Yeah, the Champions League. It's gonna be very different.
And of course, one leg ties as well.
This is why, if Liverpool were in this final eight, they would have struggled more than usual because of the one leg.
Yeah,
because they wouldn't have had the Anfield factor, would they?
Yeah, bringing him back to Anfield. Yeah, good chat again. Let's hear from you on that at TFHBS on Twitter or the Football History Boys. On Facebook. We'll take a final break. We've got a quiz to come back to, and then we'll just talk about one or two of the new blogs that we've had recently, because there's been quite a few interesting ones, particularly one that you wrote.
Very busy.
Featuring your own dad.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Right, it is time for Guess the Year, our popular segment on the podcast. Right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so I've got... The visual history of the 20th century, or the modern world, actually. I'm going to tell you some facts from a year. You have to guess it. You know the drill. Right. First one. British newspaper The Times suspends publication following failure of negotiations with print unions over the adoption of new technology.
Oh, that's interesting. We did a unit, didn't we? Do you remember it? The History of the Mass Media?
We did, actually, yeah.
Swansea University.
I enjoyed that.
With Kevin something or other.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah, it was really good
Kevin unit. McLeod. That wasn't.
Very good unit. And so the Times has obviously been around a long, long time.
Mm.
New technology.
Yeah.
When would that have been? Maybe the turn of the century. So let's just go with 1900.
Okie doke. Right, next clue is G7 nations hold their first meeting.
G7 nations. That is more modern, surely. Probably post World War. So probably 54.
Okie dokie do. Right. Greece, starring John Travolta, is released.
Ah, I should know this. I think it's colour, isn't it? Yeah, it is colour. Did it for our year 6 leavers.
Yeah, we did it as well.
Did you?
Yeah, Grease medley.
Yeah, yeah, it's great that. But I don't think I've ever actually seen it.
What?
No, I don't think I have. But jeez. I think it's early then. Travolta, isn't he? He's still alive. Can you give me that?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
He's still alive. So, 66.
Okay, look. Right, next one. You think you're football users, rather.
Yeah,
right, next one. The musical Evita by Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice opens in London. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
So Eva Perón.
Yeah.
That must be then probably early 70s, 72.
Okie doke. The soap opera Dallas debuts. American soap opera.
Yeah. I think then probably still 70s. I think it was big sort of in the late 70s, 80s. Oh,
yeah,
shot JR, yeah. Classic. Never seen it again.
No,
you know, yeah, it's just quiz knowledge, isn't it? Just knowing that was big. So let's stick still early 70s, let's say 72.
Okay. Pope John Paul II becomes Pope.
He was Pope ages.
Yeah, that wasn't his name, his Pope. Pope ages, but yeah, he was Pope for what?
He was Pope for... Well, that was shocking how a lot... 72.
Okay. Argentina win arguably the most controversial World Cup in history.
Ah,
78. Not far off.
Not far
six
off.
6 years, 6 years.
The first one was miles off.
I'm glad I got you there, because usually you get it after about two or three, so...
No, there was a good mix of things there.
There you go, nice, yeah. Popes, Greece, and so on.
Good that. Very
excellent.
That's a good quiz. Good quiz. Okay, just before we say goodbye, let's just remind listeners of some of the stuff that has been on the website. Obviously, over lockdown, we're very thankful to all of you who've submitted blogs for us. Really, really appreciate that. We had that big lockdown sort of Scottish library from Alex Horsburgh.
Yeah, incredible.
His radio show starting up again. Which is great for him, nice. But thank you for him for all the different things he sent us about all the different clubs in Scotland. A real menagerie of articles there, so enjoy them. You can find the tweets over on our Twitter, at TFHBS. What else, though? There's something that interested a lot of people, got a lot of traction from Welsh people, but just from actually people across the UK, about one that you wrote, a crest dissect. It was one of our original ever series about the history of various clubs via their crests.
Yep.
You then wrote one about the history of Cardiff City's famous crest that everyone probably remembers. Even if you're not a Cardiff fan, you remember the famous sort of crest they had. What's the story behind that, though? Give us a bit about that.
So first of all, writing it, I felt a bit weird because Cardiff City is your territory.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was writing about him, which is quite nice, actually. But basically my granddad, Jeff Jones, and my dad, Jeremy Jones, they designed the Cardiff City badge that was used from the club from the early 70s up until 2012. Wasn't used on the kit so until 85. They designed that famous Cardiff City badge with the bluebird in the middle, with the daffodil and the dragon at the top and the footballs on the side. And basically I went over to my mum and dad's and I asked them loads of questions about the badge. You know, what was the original design process? How much input did he have? So he was giving me a lot of the interesting insights into how it all came about.
And he found the original design, didn't he?
So if you go to our Twitter, you can see, or go to the website, you can see pictures of the original designs, the original drawings that my granddad did. My dad was only, I think, about 11 or 12 at the time, but he, because my dad used to collect SO football badges from petrol stations, he had all the market research that my granddad needed to look at to see, you know, what was a popular design at the time. So yeah, there's a whole piece on there with you know, quotes from my dad about the design process. But it's really cool. It's really nice to see so many people coming back with, you know, praise for that design, saying how it's, you know, the last great Cardiff City badge. You know,
it's a lot of people's favourite badge, isn't it, that?
Yes. And people, I was at a football training yesterday, and one of the players on my team's got a, he's got it tattooed on his leg. So it's just weird. I told Dad that as well, you know, which is strange, something that my granddad drew on somebody's leg now. But yeah, you can find out much more about it, and also the more turbulent recent history of the crest at Cardiff City as well. It's just been changed so many times in the recent years, and what that has meant for the club.
Yeah, great. Really, really good article. There's also one about 1927 there, so there's quite a lot of Cardiff stuff at the moment, but about how significant that was, because obviously first ever non-English and only ever non-English FA Cup winners. We've also got a piece, an updated piece about the Battle of Highbury, 1934, which I wrote right back in 2013 and I've updated since.
It's one of our first blogs.
Yeah, one of the first blogs. It's been updated with extra bits of information, a bit of Eddie Hapgood in there, who played in the game himself, who's captain of England, from his autobiography. And so there's lots of different things there. So check out the website, thefootballhistoryvoice.com. There's plenty on there.
Interesting. I did another one yesterday, didn't I, about transfers.
Yes.
The early transfer window of the 1890s, 1900s. But also, this week, we're going to be becoming, right, just for a day maybe, Los Muchachos de la Historia del Fútbol. So that's Football History Boys in Spanish. Because we got an email the other day from a Spanish reader who's offered to write us a piece. And he's written it in Spanish. And I thought, rather than me trying to poorly translate his piece, I'm going to post it in Spanish. Hopefully we'll help with the Spanish readers as well. So
that's nice superb. Spanish thank you. Yeah, and we do get a lot of interaction from across the world, which is sort of overwhelming in some ways, isn't it? When you get someone from Uruguay saying, oh, I love the stuff, I love the podcast, things like that. It's amazing that we're being listened to across the world.
Julio Macias.
Thank you for that. Check out that. And hopefully your browser will translate it for you should you need to as well.
Yeah.
And then just before we head, just to say, obviously the end of fantasy football for this year, the Football History Boys has been a competitive league.
It has been a really good league.
Really good league. Obviously post-lockdown, it was a lot of points available, really. And so the top five, well done to Adam Keenor with Heaton Mess.
Did very well, didn't he?
2,333 points. Went to school with Adam Keenor. Saw him in the Bay actually the other day. Wearing an old AC Milan top.
Nice.
AC Milan away top. Yes. Nice that.
Keeping up with the football history there.
Yes, but well done, Adam. James Cresswell in second, who went to Swansea University with 2,305 points, with making Emile, as in Emile Heskey of it. And then in third place, the Le So Solid crew, Gareth Thomas, myself, 2,292.
What's the secret?
Spend ridiculous hours thinking about it. Literally, you wouldn't believe the hours. And that,
there's
and
so many Twitter people, isn't there, now as well?
Yeah, I spent hours and hours poring over it. I literally have been awake late into the night some nights poring over plans and planning transfers. That is my big thing.
That's the difference between you and me.
Don't just make a guess. Look at the fixture. So I've got tabs always open about the fixture planner, fixture difficulty planner, and the transfer price predictor, so you know when to do it, things like that. That is how you get the good points. In fourth is Lewis Williams with 2,289, and in fifth, his brother Jesse Williams with 2,273.
Where did I come?
You came out of 50, and we'll restart this league, and I'll post the link again next season.
Yeah.
Out of 50, you came
37. What's my team?
Flying without Ings.
But we actually did.
But with Ings.
Yeah.
So you should have had Flying with Ings.
Maybe I'll change it next season. Rebrand.
1,862. I mean, you did have a couple of weeks off.
I had a few weeks off. A lot of weeks I just completely forgot.
I think it's because you're a Liverpool fan. And I think that does affect you. When you're a fan of a football club, it does affect you.
Yeah.
Whereas I can be totally neutral. And just to show you the ones, this is quite nice, isn't it? Out of all my leagues, there's lots of threes and ones.
Any money in those leagues?
No, sadly not. sadly not.
You know what you need to do next season.
There's a few ones there. Yeah, love the fantasy football. Thank you for everyone though interacting. 58,000 in the world as well. 58,000, I'll take that.
That's not bad. Who came last?
In the world?
I know, in ours. I think I know. I think it was my fiance's mum.
Michelle Bull.
Yeah, she didn't change her team. She didn't change her team once, I don't think.
Yeah, Tammy Abraham still captain. Haller. Haller and Callum Wilson at front. Lovely. Thank you very much for joining us. As we said, it is our last one of the season. We've done 16 episodes. You can find them all over on the website, over on Anchor or Spotify or Apple or Overcast or Google, however you listen to the podcast. You can catch all 16 episodes. we'll obviously have a bit of a summer break, but then we'll be back to discuss all things of the new season.
Yeah, quick turnaround.
Yeah, yeah, very quick. We have no summer break for us either. Yeah. New exciting project, the new book, obviously, as we get more information on that, coming out next year. We can't give you an exact date yet, but there will be a new book coming out and all those various things. But thank you very much for your support. Have a lovely summer.
Thank you.
Goodbye.